Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. We are back. This week was a great week for It's the Real.
We did it.
We did a bunch of stuff this week. We went and saw this documentary on Anthony Weiner, the disgraced New York congressman turned mayoral candidate.
Yeah, he had a little bit of a dick moment in the middle.
Would you call it a boxer brief moment?
I would. I would also call it just like a really big fuck up.
Yeah, if people don't know, Anthony Weiner was one of the first politicians to take a dick pic and send it as a...
He meant to DM it to his lady, Sydney Leathers.
No.
Oh, no, that was a different one.
Sydney Leathers was like way down the line.
He was calling himself Carlos Danger.
There was a whole bunch of dick pics that he would send.
Anyway, spoiler alert, he's a loser.
Yeah, and by the way, the documentary is about more than that, but touch upon that. In addition, this week, we went and we saw Boss from Dreamville.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Fiends. All of Queens was in the building. They sold out Highline Ballroom. J. Cole came out as a special guest.
Did like three songs, crushed it.
It was really awesome. Shout out to everyone from Interscope Records. Shout out to our friends, Boss Nod, Just Dave, and Big Waz, who were also really in the building. I mean, those guys carried the flag for Boss. Like, they are...
They are fiends.
They are. They're the biggest fiends. And afterwards, we ran into them on the street, and they were having
the most intense conversation.
Like, but this was not like for fun, for play. This was... They were so serious about this argument. Remember what they were arguing about?
They wrapped us up in it.
Yeah.
And the question was whether or not...
Kendrick
could
sell out MSG and Staples Center.
No, that's not the question.
Yeah, it was whether Kendrick was a bigger artist than J. Cole. Right?
That's the question.
And you said?
I said that it could be argued that J. Cole was bigger than Kendrick. I think.
No, you said the other way. You said Kendrick is a bigger artist than J. Cole. You got to remember your arguments.
Yeah, I don't know.
You like to jump on either side of the argument. You were arguing with everybody. We also went to this...
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Neither one of us was really arguing. It's the three of them, like, those guys are loudmouths.
No, I thought that this is the greatest.
And it's just us, like, chiming in, just, like, laughing.
If anyone wants to get, like, a real sense of who, like, Boss Nod and Just Dave and Big Waz are, go check out our open mic episode that we had a few months ago, where we had, 13 of our friends come in and tell their best stories. Starts off with Waz and Nod. Dave has a great story in there, too. Check that out. Also this week, this is for real... There was a Billboard article called Special Report, Pokemon Invade Music Industry Offices.
And really?
I'm just going to read a portion of this here.
I feel like people like are going to think, oh, like Jeff is in on this and Eric, you know, scripted this out.
No, not so.
Okay, so we're talking about this.
Special Report, Pokemon Invade Music Industry Offices. I just want to read a small portion of this. In the third paragraph, it says, similarly, at Warner Music Group's offices in Midtown Manhattan, multiple sightings have been confirmed, although, again, insiders could not confirm the identity or type of Pokemon. Worryingly, a source at Atlantic Records said that at least one individual visiting the label's office for a meeting earlier this week suddenly disappeared for up to a minute, only to return apologizing, having dipped away to catch a Pokemon. Jeff, do you have... any official comment about this? This is a real piece in Billboard. Do you have anything to say?
Yeah, first of all, we weren't there for a meeting.
I think... Wait, are you the source?
I'm not the source. You know that. You know who the source was. It was who sold me out. Rat.
You just sold him out.
Whenever. Fuck this. We were there hanging out with some friends. I said... I don't even think I said, hold on. I was just like...
I don't think it quoted you. Or, sorry, it didn't quote the person who ran astray of this meeting.
They said that someone walked away mysteriously.
For up to a minute.
Yeah, with up to a minute. And didn't have any explanation and came back and was like, oh, sorry, I had to go catch some Pokemon. You know? And I'd just like to say, it wasn't a meeting... who sold me out is a rat.
I'd like to say, you just referred to them as Pokemon,
mm-hmm.
which you gave me shit for last week and said that I sounded like Sinbad talking about the Kardashians. Yeah.
Still funny.
This week on A Waste of Time with It's the Real, who's our guest?
DJ Drama.
DJ Drama, the legendary mixtape DJ. He's responsible for putting guys like Jeezy on and T.I. and Lil Wayne for the Dedication mixtape series. He's worked with everyone. He's worked with us.
Yeah, which is crazy.
We get into his whole journey on this podcast right here. He has a new project on E1 Records called Quality Street Music 2. Check that out. I know there's a new Pusha T Meek Mill single that they put out the other day.
And by the way, if you feel like you have to listen to Quality Street Music 1 to feel like you haven't been left out for Quality Street Music 2.
Yes.
You know, you can.
Okay,
you,
yeah.
You don't have to.
Go back to the beginning. It's a full story.
Right. It's not like Coke Boys 1, 2, 3, 4 where you have to listen to each one of those. Or like Game of Thrones, where you have to watch it in order.
Listen, this week was Watch the Thrones for us. We've been plowing through these episodes.
It should be said that we don't really fuck with
sci-fi. No, dragons
or like,
and
yeah,
all that.
None of that. No. But then our friends came over.
They pressured us and they bullied us into watching it.
They were like, just watch one episode, like, and then turned into, no, you have to watch three episodes. And some lady in an elevator
told us it was five episodes.
Right. So then we ended up watching like 30
episodes.
So now
we're at like season three, and you know, we're working through it.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you are just listening to this podcast, you are a week late. Because Jeff, you can go to fullscreen.com/itsthereal and watch this episode a week ago.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say if you were watching this episode, if you're not watching this episode, you're a weakling.
You are a weakling. You should go to Full Screen, get that app. We shoot in high definition. You check out our apartment. You see what our guests are like. Yesterday, we put out a new episode with
Joey Fats.
Joey Fats, the Los Angeles-based ASAP affiliate. Great guy. Great episode. You should check that out. Fullscreen.com/itsthereal. Jeff, when do you want to get into this episode with DJ Drama?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Coke and Mentos, a.k.a. Popping Bottles. Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Drug Runner, a.k.a. Marion Jones. Yeah, and this is a waste of time with It's the Real. Yo, Drum, what up?
What's up, guys?
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
See, the good thing is that you were here pre the renovations, and
nice.
Now you've seen like painted walls. There's cameras here.
This is...
And the reason there's cameras here
right.
is because this is now on the Full Screen Network.
Yes. Wow. If you go to fullscreen.com/itsthereal, you can see us. You can see the angle that Drama's hat is at.
That's right. Yeah. This is all new. If you are listening at home and not watching, you are missing out. You need to tune in to fullscreen.com/itsthereal and take full advantage of this whole thing.
They don't get to see the books, though.
They don't see
they
the
don't see
not
books.
Back there. You get to see like a few books behind you there.
Okay. All right,
Dan
cool.
Charnas' book,
nice.
Shea Serrano's book. Yeah. A lot of
Eric, you're giving
Stewart.
A lot of spoilers away.
All right.
Drama, welcome back.
What's up,
back.
Guys? Thanks
How are you?
Hey, I'm good. I can't complain. You know, life is good.
You've been running around like crazy the past couple of days.
I have. Story of my life.
Okay. Yeah. Is everyone treating you all right?
They are. They're treating me good.
E1 is treating you okay?
Absolutely. Shout out to E1.
Well, tell everyone.
Great label.
Tell everyone about the new project.
Quality Street Music, Volume 2. This new album. It's coming in July. You know, I took a little hiatus. It's been like, this is my fifth album. This is my second Quality Street Music. The last album we dropped in 2012. So, you know, I was explaining to somebody, you know, like my last album, I recorded most of it at, well, I didn't record it, but most of the work I'd done over at Hot Beat Studios in Atlanta. And, you know, when you rent someone's studio out, you know, you pay by the hour.
Sure.
And that time I built Main Street Studios. So
much better business plan.
So, but the only thing about it is, since it was mine, you know, I could do whatever I want. And with that being said, you know, I'm not paying anybody hourly. So it took,
so
me,
you
a
took,
little,
your time. Yeah,
took
yeah.
me a little longer to get this one done because of that.
Yeah. The quality in Quality Street Music is a little bit higher.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I, you know, I was really proud of the last album. I'm proud of this album. You know, and just to be a DJ and be on my fifth album, you know, for me is, you know, I came in a game just trying to get my name on a flyer. You know what I mean? So to have five major label studio albums is like, you know, it's a wow moment for myself.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I do want to take it back just a little bit. We had your old friend Damian Lemon on.
That's my guy.
And he told us.
I'm the first person to ever tell him he should be a comedian, by the way.
You were.
Definitely.
Did you say go to an open mic night? You say.
Well, when I met, you know, we met freshman year of college and you know, we all stayed in the dorm together. We were all in Brawley Hall, and I was like, "Yeah, you should be a comedian." Maybe I'm not the first person. He's a funny guy. I don't want to take all the credit, you know. But you know, Damian, Dean Lemon, Dame. You know, I mean, we came up together. You know, he watched he watched my whole growth at those times when we were at school. And he was one of the first people to ever put me in a magazine. When he worked at Vibe magazine,
yeah.
You know, they were doing a spread on mixtape DJs at the time.
Right.
And I was kind of, you know, it was very early on. I was bubbling. So, you know, he went out on a limb and said, yo, we need to put Drama in here for like the new cats. You know
That's
what I'm
dope.
Saying? And
that was everybody, right? That was like the 2004
ish. 2004. Yeah. I think Puff was on the cover of the spread. Yeah. And it was like it was an OG section. You know, it was the guys of, you know, right now. I remember Green was in that section.
Yep.
And
Khaled was in there.
Yeah, you know, they told me later they cropped Khaled in. Like, he didn't actually.
Yeah, he didn't look like he, like, fit.
Yeah, he didn't show up to the video, to the photo shoot. They cropped him in.
He also looked a little bit slim, from what I remember, like, honestly.
Sure.
So I was part of, like, the new class of DJs in that. And, yeah, that was my man Dame, like, you know, really looking out for me at the time.
He said back then you were Dr. Amma.
I've had various name changes at times. You know, I mean, I've always had, you know, I never thought Drama would stick. Like, I felt like it was such a common word in the English language that nobody was going to think about me when they heard, you know, Drama. Like, if I was like, yo, my name's Drama. And, you know.
Because you're like a low-key guy.
Well, just the word itself. Like, you know, TNT had We Know Drama.
And right.
You know, when early on in my career, you know, K-Slay was the drama king.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then there's another DJ who's my homie who's in Atlanta named DJ Trauma. And he was on the radio at the time. So I couldn't go anywhere in Atlanta.
There was also Drama who had left, right, left.
There was also Drama
who had left. The rapper.
Yeah. Actually, which kind of worked in my favor years later.
Because people thought that
well, I had to buy his name from him.
Did you really?
Yeah, because there was another quote-unquote DJ Drama, this kid out of Chicago that tried to sue me when I first came out with my albums. But you know, yeah, so I would, like, through my years try to change my name. Like, you know, I went by Dramatic for a minute. I tried to use my real name, Tyrese Sinkay. Just, you know, some
the
way
only
to
one I know is Jedi.
Jedi, yeah. That was I used to, like, when I was in Philly, I used to hang with a lot of a graffiti
nerds.
Artists.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was the nerd. And you know, so I used to tag Jedi. Mm. You know, so that was my tag name. So when I first got to Atlanta, I tried to change my name to DJ Jedi, you know, but somehow, some way, Drama just always kept
coming back
all the time, man. I guess it's the gift and the curse of the name. And you know, so it, you know, once Gangsta Grills really popped off, like, it was, you know, I couldn't change it anymore.
Yeah. By the way, so back in that Vibe article, you talk about, like, and this is 2 years before you actually get arrested, you talk about, like, the RIAA coming at you.
Really?
Or, like, you talk about, like, the RIAA apparently, like, scoping you guys out. You were aware of them.
Well, I know I was aware of them within, like, just the mixtape game. So, you know, I hadn't had any bad run-ins with them at that point. And, you know, so I still, when the raid happened, I kind of was still caught off guard. But, you know, as mixtape DJs, you know, we understand that there was at that time in the game, there was a fine line, you know, on what we were doing and everything. We were getting a lot of, you know, support, you know, behind closed doors from, you know,
labels,
power players and labels and everything. But, you know, when it came down to it, nobody was prepared to, like, come out and be like, hey, we, you know, we promote mixtape DJs. So
right.
it was a fine line.
Well, when you were locked up, who were the people who really, like, you know, looked after you, kept in touch while you were, you know.
Well, like, I was only locked up for a day.
But still, like, during that
it
whole
was a
time,
long day, though.
Yeah, well, it was a long day. You know,
it's like Paris Hilton hours.
But when people were afraid to, like, you know, mention your
name,
irony, who were the ones who stuck around?
The irony of the whole thing, that probably the person I remember the most really speaking out was Pimp C. And it's so interesting because when Pimp came home from jail, you know, Bun and other people were trying to convince him to do a mixtape. And he was like, fuck doing a mixtape. I'm not giving away this shit for free. You know what I'm saying? Like, they need to pay me, you know? And I, at the time, was, you know, everybody wanted to do a mixtape with me. So it was like, he didn't. But respectfully, you know, when everything went down, Pimp really spoke up in my favor. And, you know, I always remember that. Rest in peace.
While Mano told us that while Tip was locked away, Nelly was, like, his closest guy. Mm-hmm. Like, he just, like, really kept in touch, which was, to us, was surprising. And,
right.
Like, but, yeah.
Yeah.
Was there anyone like that who reached out, like, during that Black Ball time?
Well,
like,
I mean, Tip was always in my corner. You know, I mean, Atlantic was in my corner. I mean, I was putting out my first album at the time. So, you know, they definitely, once it happened, they looked at it like, oh, wow, we can sell records off this. You know, so my first single at the time was Feds Taking Pictures.
Yeah.
So,
like, it was all part of the plan.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it was there were people around. You know, Kevin Lyles was somebody who kind of, you know, spoke to me and you know gave me advice and what have you and whatnot. So it was cool. You know, it was a, you know, we got Pat. Jeezy came. I remember Jeezy came on our show real early on and you know, after the raid and was like right there to support.
Mm-hmm.
What did your mom think
when I got locked up?
Yeah.
She was a little shook, you know, but after it happened, the support system I had around me was like, yo, you know, we good. This is nothing. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I came to the table kind of early on when that situation and just made everybody feel a little more comfortable, like this is going to be all right and, you know, nothing to worry about. You know, my mom's a mom, you know.
Yeah, so sure.
Her son went to jail, and you know what I'm saying? And
I mean, my mom was worried.
I feel like...
Too funny.
Yeah. So you're Philly born and raised.
Yes.
And the first time you went down to Atlanta was for college?
It was. I took a few trips down there. Before I went to school down there, I went a few years earlier with my dad. He had a conference to go to, mm-hmm. and it was during the summertime, and it was this thing called the National Black Arts Festival going on. And you know, I kind of could just feel the energy in the city, you know. So I was like, it was vibrant, like it, you know. And I had been to Atlanta before, but never had that, you know. And the teenage years are kind of different, you know. So as I was picking schools, you know, it was between, for the most part, it was either between Temple, NYU, Howard, and Clark Atlanta University, mm-hmm. and Morehouse at the time. And, you know, I wound up getting a scholarship to CAU, thankfully.
For what?
It was an academic scholarship.
Dope.
My dad knew somebody that was working in the academic department.
Gotcha,
so.
Okay.
I mean, my grades were good, though.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that kind of – I always thought I was going to go to NYU. Like, that was my goal, my career goal at
to study
time.
Drama
to study film, you know. And but as you know, I was definitely looking for a city like that I could pursue my DJ career in, and Atlanta seemed like a good second choice, honestly, to New York at the time.
So you did go down there with like these aspirations and to take the city over.
Well, I don't know if I thought that advanced, but mm-hmm. I definitely, you know, I was looking. Philly taught me like a very hustler mentality. You know, I think that's one thing that we're very good at. So as I was going to school, you know, I knew that, you know, outside of the classroom, you know, I had a lot of aspirations. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when did you get to know Sense and Cannon?
I met Sense like probably the first day of school. Me, Sense, my man Kyle, Dame, and Chris and Keith kind of all became close friends like that first really week. You know, I was on the second floor. My room number in Brawley Hall was 215. And somebody was like, yo, you know, it's another DJ in here from Philly. He's up on the third floor. So I went up there, and it was Sense. You know, he had like a brand tattoo, like his name's Brandon on his arm and everything. And he wound up telling me that he had actually heard of me because it was like there was a barbecue in Philly that he was trying to get the gig, and it was like, nah, we got DJ Drama already. So he's like, who is this guy? You know, so we wound up at school together. We
one
had a
floor apart.
We had a little DJ battle and everything, and we kind of had been inseparable from them, just pretty much doing all the college parties and, you know, cafeteria, whatever, what have you, whatever. And then the next year, this tall, lanky kid came down the strip and was like, you know, I'm from Philly. I make beats.
That was me.
And, you know, my man Kyle had kind of, because they went to the same high school. Mm-hmm. So he was like, he told me, like, Bull was a nut. Like, you know, in Philly term, like, oh, Bull's a nut. So I was kind of a little hesitant to befriend him at
sure.
the time. And he gave me a beat tape. I think we were still on tapes at the time. And I listened to it, and I was like, oh, this shit's hot. Like, this nigga's all right. He's kind of nice. So that's how me and Donnie Brasco became friends. And
and there's so many colleges down there and so many opportunities
to DJ. Yeah, definitely. The AUC in itself, just, you know, it's just at the time it was Clark Atlanta University. It was Morris Brown. It was Morehouse and Spelman. So, you know, I mean, it was like – everything was right there. I mean, literally, first, it had so many people from so many different areas, like, you know, people from California, people from Seattle, people from the Bay, people from Houston, people from, you know, that was really how I learned about screw music, just from going to school, you know, people from DC, like, and everybody, New York, everybody wanted to hear what they wanted to hear, Florida. So, you know, at a party, it was like, you know, here I'm coming from a Philly at the time where I'm playing fucking Wu-Tang, Smith & Wesson, Tribe Called Quest.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And Kool Keith, you know, yeah. And here I am. I got to go, you know, I got to play Pac. I got to play Snoop. I got to play Go-Go. I got to play Caribbean music. I got to play bass music. Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. You gotta go in for New York City, like the whole tri-state. Like, you know, you got to play some Houston music. You got to play Texas. And so Louisiana, you know, so it taught me very early on, and it taught us just how to really be very well-rounded as DJs. And
by the way, people should know this is way before you were able to download all this music.
Absolutely.
So you're getting like physical vinyl. Absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of
who's
vinyl.
Carrying all your stuff?
A lot of my friends.
Yeah, good friends. Good friends. Yeah.
A lot of good friends, and being the first to the club and the last to leave.
Damn.
Those are the days, like, you know, you were really the last person to leave the club because you would have to fucking carry all those crates.
Well, what are some of the clubs you were playing down there at the time?
SO was popping. I remember doing 112 early on. Mm-hmm. There's this club called Yin Yang Cafe.
Okay.
What's the new name of? What's Yin Yang turned into? Apache. It's now called Apache. Yin Yang Cafe was probably my first residency. Kaya was popping.
Yo, shout out to Lake, by the way.
Yeah, Lake knows everything.
Kaya was popping. I remember, you know, that was when Nabs had it on Smash and all these clubs. I would like be so excited to play for the first time, you know, because I mean, I witnessed so many people in these clubs. But Yin Yang Cafe was probably my first residency. It was a Wednesday night. I did like a poetry night. I was DJing at. Yeah.
You follow the poets?
Well, I was
you're in between. I was kind of like, you know, Kid Capri.
You know, my early days, I was like somewhat of a backpacker.
Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, so, neo, you know, soul. Like, well, because that's like Philly.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, just kind of, you know, where I was at the time. Like, Sense used to kind of put me on. Like, yo, you can't cut Mace's verse off on that Bad Boy song.
Well, by the way, he's right.
Yeah.
Right.
He's right.
So, you know, like, I would do, like, Lyricist Lounge. Like, you know, my roommate at the time was this guy named Rubix, who first introduced me to Talib Kweli, you know, and he was like, yo, you know, Kweli and my other man, Mos Def, are about to start this group called Black Star, you know. So I was right there when they first got their deal at Raucous, like, man. When they were like, yo, it's this new label. So I witnessed all this stuff firsthand, you know. So when Lyricist Lounge would come to Atlanta, I would DJ, and, you know, we would go eat at R. Thomas, like me, Bahamadia, Black, Mos Def, and, you know, so those were the early days of some of the early clubs that I was
doing. Did you know Bahamadia before?
I've known Bahamadia since I was probably 10, 9, 10. Yeah. She lived next door to my dad, so, and down in West Philly, down the bottom, 33rd and Haverford, you know. So I remember before I even knew it was her, at the time I had been living with my mom in Germantown, but she came out with this record called Funk Vibe, and DJ Ran used to always play it on Power 99, and I was like, it was the shit, you know. And so then we got close, and she befriended me. And, you know, I remember when she took me to J-Ru's signing party in New York City. Premier was DJing. Recipes Guru was there. It was the first time I heard Premier. He played Soundboy Burial for the first time. Man. He was playing Scarface, Never Seen a Man Cry. And, you know, so she was she befriended me very early on. If you look at the back of her album cover, Collage, which is celebrating 20 years this year, you know, there's a picture of me in the back. And, you know, I was like...
Wearing a head wrap?
I used to wear head wraps, though.
Did you?
Yeah. I had ski goggles on.
Okay.
My dreads were coming out of the ski goggles.
Like wearing ski goggles?
No, I had them on top of my head. Yeah, yeah. To the side. Yeah.
So like Ray Shremmerd.
Something like that, yeah. I was doing that a long time ago, in the 90s. So then, I'm in the video. I'm in her video. So I was like popping in high school. Like, damn. Oh, drums and Bahamadia's video. So, yeah.
Did you know the Roots too or no?
Of course. Yeah. I met the Roots. I knew the Roots when they were the Square Roots. I remember... the guy who was Chuck Stone, who goes on to do the What's Up commercials.
Right.
He directed one of their first videos for this song called Pass the Popcorn. They had an album out called Organics. And, you know, ninth grade for me was, you know, the Square Roots were like, they were it. You know, yeah. it was a group called The Goats in Philly, and it was the Square Roots. And there was, you know, various members of the Roots besides that who you see now, and they used to be a collective. And my man Kenyatta and my man, this other kid I know named Dame, used to kind of run around with them as well. And, you know, Malik B and Black Thought were like some of the first people to ever like freestyle on my mixtapes, like early. Dice Raw, too. Dice Raw broke the chair in my mom's crib like, back in the day in my basement.
Just sitting on it?
Yeah, yep. Just sat on it. And
I didn't know if he like threw it against the wall.
So I knew those guys real early on, like, you know, Quest used to play video games on South Street, and I would run into them and stuff. So, you know, that was probably the first group, you know, them and then definitely Bahamadia, like the first people I ever saw, like, kind of make it, like, really, like, wow, this, you can really do this shit, like, get a record deal. We used to go to the Trocadero in Philly. I remember, you know, at their signing party, and
to,
you know,
Geffen or whatever.
Yeah, to Geffen. Yeah. Yep, when they signed to Geffen, and you know, that was kind of for me, like, okay, this can really happen. You know, I really saw people in front of my eyes, like, get record deals and be on Yo MTV Raps, and like, damn, I know these guys. Like, crazy. This shit can really go down.
Who was popping in Atlanta at the time? When you get down there,
is that JD?
JD was definitely popping. You know, I got down there right before he put the 1472 album out. So yeah, JD had the City on Smash. LaFace was everything, like Outkast. You know, Outkast and Dungeon Family, Organized Noize, and Goody Mob. I remember, you know, and during this time, like, everybody used to be on campus. Like, you know, you would have to make a stop in the AUC on the Strip at some point. So, you know, they were pretty much running the game. Nabs was the man in the city. Pac had just got killed. Master P was coming into, you know, his dominant force. Yeah, so, you know, those were those were some good years. But, you know, and being on campus was like, you know, through those years of school, like, I saw everybody on campus from Hov to Nas to 50 to Goody Mob to, you know, Outkast. Everybody used to be on campus. Yeah. It was like one of those spots.
So now it's crazy. Nobody even thinks about Atlanta anymore.
I know, right?
So where do you first meet, like, JD or Lil Jon or anybody, like, around town?
I met Lil Jon early on, because, you know, he had his roots in DJing. How did I originally first meet Lil Jon? Did I meet Lil Jon through Sense? Sense got an internship at Hot 97, so he kind of got in the loop a little before me. And Cersei and Lil Jon were production partners together, and they, you know, they came up together and what have you. I mean, they did the Mabu record, which is, you know, back popping again.
Which is unbelievable.
Shout to Cersei on that. Yeah. So, I met Lil Jon quite early on, you know, and he really was one of the first people to really befriend us, you know, and kind of, you know, I mean, hence how he became the voice of Gangsta Grillz.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, he was always a very humble guy, very down to earth, and, you know, just real cool.
I mean, I know the story behind how Lil Jon became the voice of Gangsta Grillz because, like, there was no guest for
There was no guest for Five. Lil Jon was the first ever host for a Gangsta Grillz mixtape. Like, I did Gangsta Grillz 1 and Gangsta Grillz 2, and I was kind of hustling them on my own. And, you know, at the time, everybody in the East Coast and up top was having hosts, and, you know, Puff was hosting this, and Nas was hosting this, and I was like, damn, how can I compete? You know, and I was making all types of mixtapes. I had, like, reggae mixtapes, R&B mixtapes, you know, and I, you know, of course, I had to have a South mixtape. So I asked, like, three people, Lil Jon being one of them, to host my tape, and Lil Jon was the one to say yes. So he came to the crib. Me and Sense were living in the Fourth Ward at the time, and you know, hence how Gangsta Grizzles. And the next tape, everybody was like, "Who you got the host? Who you got the host?" And I was like, "Fuck, I don't have the host. Like, let me just use Lil Jon's voice again," and it stuck.
Well, so you're at school, but are you taking road trips to other cities down south? Are you getting to know the?
Nah, not yet. Like, Gangsta Grillz kind of happened after school. So by when I'm in school, I hadn't really, I was pretty local. Like, you know, we ran the campuses. That was one thing about it. Like, we definitely, you know, when it came to schools, like in the AUC, like, everybody knew Drum, Sense, and Cannon. Like, that was our stomping grounds. No way about it. Outside of that, like, it was, you know, you could go on the east side and they'd be like, "Who?" Like, you know, so
Dr. Amma.
Yeah.
They, like, my, you know, everybody knew me in the AUC. Outside of that, we didn't really get no recognition or no. And one of the first people to actually take me out of town while I was in school was my man Poon Daddy, who was on the radio.
I'm sorry, what?
His name's Poon Daddy. Uh-huh. He was on the radio at the time.
Why did they call him that?
Well, I don't know. Where did Poon get his name from? He's originally from California, but... Yeah, but Poon.
Oh, I mean, I have one guess as to why his name is Poon Daddy. But anyway.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So Poon Daddy had this show with this guy named Chris Lover Lover.
Oh, heard of him.
They were on the radio. It was Chris Lover Lover and Poon Daddy. And Poon, yeah, Poon, I don't know what he saw. You know, he has an eye for talent. I will definitely give him that. You know, he found Bobby V, found YG. He was part of Ludacris, this camp early on. And, you know, he definitely was the first person to ever take me out of town in those days and everything. And
where'd you go?
Where did we go? I think we went somewhere in, was it Carolina or Alabama or something? Hmm. I don't remember. It was somewhere in the South, though.
Yeah.
So, but I wasn't really moving around a lot. And then I also, you know, I had Kevin Powell, the writer Kevin Powell, you know, was always a good friend of mine. And we dabbled here and there about him managing me. So, you know, he used to kind of bring me up to New York a lot and do various gigs. And he took me on the road to do a couple things. He took me, we did an event at the, when hip hop got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And we did like a seminar. It was him, me, and Common. And he's the first person to actually take me overseas too. He took me to London right after I was out of school. So you know, I had various connections here and there. You know, but most of my career was based in the AUC throughout those early
did
years.
Did Chris Lover Lover ever try to pass you like some of his material and be like, "Yo, like I'm that guy"?
Nah, he was kind of really on before me. So I was kind of trying to get his attention. I remember me and Sense did a gig. At Holyfield's crib. I think Poon might have got us that gig too.
Like Rick Ross's current place?
Yeah, Rick Ross's current place. We did a gig. We did two gigs there, but the first gig we did there.
Does that mean that there is like a some sort of like area that you can perform?
Well,
like,
we DJed at the pool, so we were outside right near
both
the pool.
Times?
No, the other time we DJed inside near the bowling alley.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That just sounds like a normal thing. Yeah.
So that was cool. I think that was for his son's. It was his son's birthday. I think.
Man.
How far apart are they on like the Google Maps? You know.
Yo, that was the biggest crib I had ever been to at that time.
Man.
By far.
We heard Rocky Fresh told us that Rick Ross has like a couple of places down in Atlanta.
Yeah. Yep.
That's just nuts.
Yeah, he has another crib.
What, like a compound?
Well, he has another house that he, you know, it's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice.
Cause,
it's
know,
not as big as the Holyfield crib.
Because what,
yeah, what is. Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, it's a great crib.
Man.
I've been there too.
It's nice to visit.
Sure. Well, okay. So when do you first meet Tip?
I first met Tip. So I'm out of school. I'm kind of, you know, once I got out of school, I never really got a job. So I'm kind of just hustling.
Shouts to CAU.
Yes. So, I get this phone call randomly, from Jason Jeter, never met him before. And he says, "Yo, I got your number off the back of one of your mixtapes in the barbershop." And he was like, "You know, I got this new artist. We're signed to Arista. We got a song with, Beanie Siegel. And his name's Tip.
You know? Now he's speaking your language, like Philly, Atlanta. Yeah.
That's how he sold it to me, though. Sure. He's like, "Yo, he's got a song with Beanie Siegel. You know, we signed to Arista," and he was like, "I want to bring him through." I was like, "All right, cool." You know, mind you, at this time, I wasn't getting phone calls like that. Like, nobody was like, "Yo, I want to play you some music."
Even though your number's on the back of the mixtapes?
Nah, I wasn't. Nobody was using the number. Like, I just was I put it on there hoping to get some phone calls. You know? And it was more to get calls to, like wholesale the mixtapes, you know. So he called me and I was like, "All right, yeah, come through." You know, I mean, again, like this was out of the ordinary for me to get that type of call. So I was like, whatever. So I guess this was like summer 2000. So Tip and Jason come through. They come over to crib. Tip's kind of, you know, he's quiet. You know what I'm saying? He still has the Tip swagger, but you know, he's definitely quiet. And me and Sense were living next door to each other. We had this like duplex and everything. And I used to make everybody take their shoes off. Where I used to make the mixtapes was like now where somebody has like their washer and dryer. So it's like you walk in the crib, there's like a living room, there's a bedroom, and then next to the bathroom, there's this little area for the washer and dryer where I have my equipment set up, and Tip comes in there.
Were they like just like racks of DVD burners or
CD burners? I don't even know if I had one CD burner.
Okay.
I had one CD burner at the time. I would have to outsource.
Yeah.
I would definitely have to outsource to get the CDs done. But I had, you know, I had a four track mini mixer that I would make the mixtapes on, and you know, the turntables and a mixer. Mm-hmm. And Tip chose the For the Fam beat. Mm. It was a Mill beat. Mm-hmm. It was a Mill on that. And, you know, that was the first time he rapped for me and first I'd ever heard. And, you know, I remember him rapping and he said, like, I'm, you know, king of the South. And I was, you know, I was like, it's good to meet you. You know, we definitely going to link and everything. And him and Jake left. And I told Sense, like, yo, this nigga just said he was the king of the South. Like, this guy's crazy, you know. And at that time, like, they were, you know, they were grinding, we were grinding, and you know, a lot of our relationship was really established between me and Jeter. I was doing a lot of clubs in Buckhead, and you know, Tip would come through, and Tip was like, you know, he had the record out with Pharrell, off the I'm Serious album, and with Beanie Man, mm-hmm. and then you know, but in the city, like, he was really becoming that guy, you know, and as well as, you know. Jason saw my hustle on the mixtape side of things, and you know, it was something, you know, he's originally from Jersey, so it was something he was taking advantage of too when they weren't getting the recognition that that he Arisha, felt they deserved. Arisha, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So he was like, okay, well, we're just gonna put these mixtapes out and do it on our own. And by this point, you know, Tip had already, he had kind of rapped on a couple of tapes by now. I remember him and Phil Mob actually freestyling for me on a project. And then I did a tape. And Jeter came to me like, you know, that one was cool. That one was all right, you know. But, like, I got an idea. Let's do, like, an all Grand Hustle, you know, Gangsta Grills. And that was really when Gangsta Grills went from being a regular mixtape series of just, you know, the hottest records out to something special like a mini album, you know. So Tip and Grand Hustle and Jeter really gave me the first opportunity to do what I had been watching, like, Who Kid and 50 and Green and M and, you know, everybody doing K-Slay and Dipset and, you know, everybody doing up top. Like, here was the opportunity for me to make something that, you know, that uniquely was influenced by that, you know. And that was the Tip and PSC meets Gangsta Grills was the first of, you know, the what Gangsta Grills has become.
And that's one where, like, he buried Lil Flip?
That was not the actual one. Okay. That was the next Tip tape that was Down with the King, so this was the precursor to that. Yeah,
what a time.
Yeah. it was a fun time. Yeah, that, and it was so crazy because, you know, I remember Little Flip actually, you know, being one of the people I went to kind of early to try to get him to host it through his manager at the time. No hard feelings, this is all old stuff, but you know, he was like, we need like 10,000, and I was like, I don't have it. You know, so I never really had a relationship with Flip, so you know, when the Tip stuff went down, it's kind of like I didn't really, you know, it wasn't hard for me to pick sides.
Sure.
Or stay loyal to, you know.
Did Flip's manager call you?
Nah.
Your number on the back of the mixtape? Yeah.
I mean, I've seen him plenty of times since then. He's a good guy. He's still, you know, in the business and everything. But, yeah, Tip was, that was probably one of the few times I've really seen Tip really, really be into doing a mixtape. You know, he was all in for Down with the King. You know, but Down with the King was like, that was my first, around those years, that was like my first experience with like going places and being the talk of the town. And, you know, everybody, you know, that tape was just, it was everywhere.
Yeah. So I remember you did a document, you're part of a documentary for Jeezy,
mm-hmm.
and you said that he invented Making It Rain.
He definitely was one of the, well, BMF invented mm-hmm. Making It Rain.
Sure.
So, you know, Jeezy being a part of BMF, yes, he was definitely, you can credit him to to that. You was know, that because, like, I mean, you know, strip clubs before, you know, before Atlanta and before, you know, what has become today, you know, when people used to tip, they used to put it in the back of the girls, you know, G-string.
Sure. Or, right.
You know, put it on the counter in the front or something. You know, I mean, we created a whole new lifestyle.
Yeah, now you bring a tow truck.
You know, throwing it up in the air. I mean, that was, you know, BMF, like, people will tell you stories, like, you would be in the club and you wouldn't see the ground. Like, it would literally be all green. Like, I remember, like, regular women would become strippers that night at the club when BMF.
It's just a smart business move. That's right, like, yeah.
Fuck this, I'm getting to this buddy, like, just like that.
When did you first get to meet Wayne?
I first met Wayne. I talked to Wayne on the phone. I was on a bus with Tip. We were on the Urban Legend tour, and Tip was on the phone with him. And I was in my bunk, I remember, and I was like, yo, that's Wayne? I was like, let me talk to him. And I was like, what's up, man? He was like, what's up? I was like, yo, we got to get one in. He was like, absolutely, let's do it. So I guess maybe right after we got off tour, him and Cortez was in Atlanta. They were over at Patchwork, mm-hmm. in the smaller room, and that was my first time meeting him. So I went in there. You know, I had brought a bunch of beats, and you know, for him to rap on for our tape and everything. So, you know, we kind of vibed out, and from there, I remember just kind of coming up with the name Dedication and sending him a script of you know, how I wanted to. It was almost like an interview, you know, and I had him read. I would just kind of like write questions down for him to kind of, you know, go over stuff, because I remember writing like, you know, are you going to sign a Rockefeller and things like that he, you know, he discussed on the tape. Mm-hmm. And I liked Lil Wayne, but I had used a lot of his songs from his Squad Up tapes at the time when I was doing early Gangsta Grills, but it wasn't really till I heard the music and what he was doing with the Dedication when I was like, yo, this guy's really on some shit. Like this is different. You know, this is like his sound and where rap was at the time. And lyrically, like, I was like, yo, he's going for some shit. And I remember Lake being one of the first people who was over at Walker Street when Dedication came out. I was like, yo, like I listened to that tape. Like, yo, dude's on some other shit, you know? And
then how do you go about like distributing that like through the rest of the South? That's different than maybe like a Tip tape, which is, you know, certainly Atlanta where you know well.
Well, by this period, by the time we had did when Dedication came out, it was after Trap or Die. I mean, they almost came out, you know, as going back now, you know, now in the more recent years, all mixtapes have like release dates. This mm-hmm. was like, back then it was like, you know, when Mix Union got it.
Right.
And they put it up. That's when the release date was. But I remember Trap or Die and Dedication, what feels like a month or two apart of each other, the first Dedication. So this was like 05. So, cause I remember saying to myself after Trap or Die, like, what the fuck am I going to do next? Like, how am I going to top this? You know? So by this period, I had already kind of figured out somewhat of a distribution system, mm-hmm. and, shout my man, Jason Brown, who used to work with me at the time. You know, when he came aboard my team, he really, you know, he got down to the nitty gritty of how to kind of maximize. And so we had, by this point, by the time Dedication was ready to go, we had figured out a certain store list and system of how we were getting the tapes out. And then, you know, the bootleggers in themselves were, you know, they were the biggest retailers out. You know what I'm saying? Bootleggers would, you know, they killed Canal Street. Like, that was even some of how Wayne's, you know, prominence on the East Coast happened, because the bootleggers were taking Gangsta Grills and just, you know, distributing them everywhere.
Man. It's a crazy time to think back.
It is. It's wild, you know, just to think, like, even with mixtapes, I mean, this is before download. Like, you know, I remember, you know, that Piff used to be like the enemy. Like, yeah. Fuck that Piff. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, they're giving free mixtapes away, you know? And I remember Wayne saying, like, fuck that Piff. So, you know, like, this was, you know, I just remember trying to get on the first line of Mix Unit. You know, I will say, thankfully, like, I came up in an era and where Gangsta Grills was prominent, when there was somewhat of an internet world, because, you know, it enabled me to like touch people that I may not have been able to touch like 5 years earlier, when it was, you know, everybody just would go to their local bodegas and cop music. So
yeah,
you know, I definitely came up in the era right before, you know, downloads and, you know, free music on social websites and everything like that. So which helped me, you know, get my fan base to a larger audience.
Yeah, I mean, were you even making money off of mixtapes at any point? Like, when did you start making money off mixtapes?
About around that time, around like 05 06.
So this is like after a few years of this.
Oh, this is after, I mean, if you want to count, like
6 years,
like 10 years,
man.
Like, I made my first mixtape in probably 94 95. So,
and Jason Jeter helped get you the deal at Atlantic originally.
Yep. Because I was DJing for TI on mm-hmm. the road. So Grand Hustle had their deal with Atlantic, so I was in and out the Atlantic building all the time. And I mean, honestly, I had offers from everybody. I remember I remember I met with Brian Leach when he was running
RCA.
Was before RCA when he had signed Little John and Pitbull. TVT.
Yeah.
I met with Brian Leach. I met with Jermaine. I met with a lot of labels, you know, and a lot of labels had shown interest, you know. But you know, I'm a very loyal person, so you know, I signed to Grand Hustle through Atlantic at the time, and you know, I had definitely been in and out of the Atlantic building because of Tip, so I kind of knew the staff, I knew how the building had worked and had moved, and you know, they gave me a great deal. So yeah, so that was, you know, Jay definitely helped walk that in.
So today, you're working with Lil Uzi Vert,
mm-hmm.
and we only know him through you, right? And, you know, you have quite a track record of people you've worked with. Uzi's from a different generation.
Right.
So
totally.
What made you, like, know that he was the one?
I mean, I can't.
Because he is.
Yeah, no, he's definitely the one, and I have to give him a lot of the credit for that.
No, you made him.
That's right.
Yeah, don't you understand?
I did. you know, honestly, man, it came from the origins of it came from conversations between me and Lake and Cannon, and you know, just like we've been a part of so many artists' career, and at the time, you know, we had dipped and dabbled with trying to sign a bunch of artists. I mean, the Migos,
really,
Dave East,
really,
OT Genesis, T-Fly, Problem. You know, these are all guys that we were right on the cusp of.
Guys.
Like, yeah, you like, guys need to learn how to close.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that was like, that was part of our frustration. Like, yo, like, what the fuck? You know,
Uzi cannot leave the room before he signs.
So, you know, I feel like there's so many things that I've accomplished in my career. And that was one of the things I was like, you know, that. You know, I want to have some success with an artist like under us.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So Cannon came in the studio. I'd never forget it. And he had just got back from Philly. He was driving from Philly to Atlantic City. He was listening to Power 99. He heard DJ Diamond Cuts play a record called Lil Uzi. He called her and he said, "What's that?" And she was like, "Yo, this is this kid I'm working with." And he came in the radio room in Mean Streets and was like, "Yo, Lil Uzi Vert." And I was like, "Run it!" Like I hadn't even heard the record. I just was like, "Run it!" Like, like, yo, if you say it's a go, let's do it. So, Cannon and Uzi established a relationship. Cannon hosted Uzi's tape, "The Real Lil Uzi," and you know, that's pretty much how it started. I met Uzi for the first time on the first Wiz tour I did under the Influence,
mm-hmm.
and he came on a bus and he just this my jeans or
right.
something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Off top. And I was like, "Yo, who is this little nigga?" You know, so you know, and it worked out. I mean, he's the one.
Well, so if you look at like footage of any of his shows,
but especially the Roots Picnic?
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Like
right?
waves of just people. It's just wild.
Nah, it's dope. I mean, cause you know, I took him on tour with me last year, with Wiz Khalifa and Fall Out Boy, and you definitely see the evolution in his shows, which is, you know, amazing to watch. And it's exciting, man. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, listening to all the music from Love is Rage for the whole, you know, Wiz tour and, you know, watching how it caught on and everything. And I mean, it's definitely exciting for us to, you know, he's from Philly. You
yeah,
know what
right.
saying? So, Atlantic's excited. They're
Listen.
Happy and.
Like I was just gonna say, like, it doesn't matter what we tell you, but like, we know from inside the building, like, it's very exciting.
Nah, it's good. You
double
know.
XL cover now.
Yeah, double XL cover.
How exciting is it for you as a father to introduce your daughters or get a picture with Nicki Minaj at the Roots?
That was pretty cool. You know, I'm definitely should get a good Father's Day present.
It's coming up.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
That was cool. You know, and I've known Nicki for a long time, and I mean. It's just like, I mean, you know, it's for a lot of the people they meet or get to be around, or you know, it's pretty cool.
What are your daughters listening to right now?
Only Lil Uzi Vert.
That's right.
They
strictly.
Like, they like Uzi. They okay. definitely like Uzi, and her friends in school like Uzi. My younger daughter, what is she listening to? She's kind of a Bieber fan still.
Okay.
Yeah, she's still kind of somewhat.
Do they get like free reign over like their iTunes? Like they get to pick whatever they want, choose what's on the radio?
Yeah, I give them free reign as long as it's, you know, clean.
Okay.
Whatever happened to, speaking of Nicki, like Drake and Gucci were supposed to do a mixtape with you.
Yeah.
Why did that never happen? Was that just Gucci's legal problems?
Nah, this was before the legal problems. It just, I don't think.
Or in the middle of his legal problems.
This was like 2009, so this is really early on. It just never got done. I remember, you know, they recorded like two songs together, and then, yeah, the tape never panned out. That would have been a good tape, though.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the Pharrell Gangsta Grillz?
That was
there
amazing.
Are people who say, who like lay claim that Pharrell has never sounded that good.
Yeah. Nah, I feel like that tape kind of helped raise a generation. Like, I get a lot of hipster kids like, yo, that shit changed my life. Like, that was the Pharrell Gangsta Grillz. And, like, that was an exciting time because I remember it was, you know, when I did the Pharrell Gangsta Grillz, like, at the time, people were like, what? Pharrell Gangsta Grillz? How does this make sense? And I was like, watch how I make it make sense. You know, so that and the Little Brother tape really helped take Gangsta Grillz like to the left, which was, you know, for me coming from my backpacker roots, like, fucking right. I told y'all, you know what I'm saying? So, but he was Pharrell at the time. So he approached me. I had met him already through Tip when Tip was on House Arrest too. You know, we were working on an album and everything. So I had, we had engaged in conversations a few times before that, and he called me and he was like, yo, I want to do a tape. And I was like, me too, you know. and the tape's a classic. A little bit of history, Canon actually put that tape together.
Really?
Yeah, so like the extra nice cuts,
yeah.
Shout to Don Cannon.
Yeah,
that's dope.
Yeah, but that was a good tape, you know. It was a, you know, and Pharrell, like, I, you know, he picked some great instrumentals to rap on and everything, and you know, it was big. Like, it was just, you know, it was a fucking Pharrell tape, like the one and only.
And then for the Little Brother one, Bun B was on there. Somebody else, who else was on there?
They rapped over Kanye. Most Def was on the tape.
Yep.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Was it weird to be shouting like Gangsta Grillz on that?
No, they were so excited. Like, they were so excited. Like, yo, this, like, you're about to be screaming over a Little Brother tape, you know?
And so, that's gonna be wild, by the way, to consider, like, you know, going from from a place where like no one was calling you to a place where people are so excited to have drop on there.
It was. I mean, and it happened like, you know, looking back, it feels like it, as much time as I put in my career, like when I hit, you know. And I remember it was almost overwhelming, and I was like, whoa, like, okay, you did it, like, like, you really did it, like, you got here, like, shit, you know. This was the time when like Power Mix Show summits were still going on in Puerto Rico, yeah, where all the DJs and the artists would convulge, and I just remember, like, everyone, you know, all this energy that I was getting and this love, and like, you know, it's the first time I met Busta, the first time Khaled approached me and was like, yo, Drum, da da da. And I remember just like, okay, you got here, like, how do you stay here? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's a long journey, my guy. You know, Puff was calling my phone and, you know, asking what's hot in the city. I just was like, it was crazy. Like, you know, and so, you know, going, like you said, going from when I could barely, you know, get in the club to here I am, like, you know, the talk of the industry, and everybody wanted the Gangsta Grillz, you know. And so to be able to do a project with Little Brother, to me, was like, yo, it was almost like an ode to my roots, you know what I'm saying? And you know, the excitement was I was just as excited as they were, you know, because it was almost branching out for me.
When did you take your number off of the back of mixtapes?
Not soon enough, because I don't know if I would have got raided. Yeah, not after the raid.
Is this DJ Drama? Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Right. Are you home?
Not soon enough.
At what point do you know that it's time to stop giving stuff away for free and start, like, getting paid for consulting or producing or different ventures for, you know, Atlantic or whoever?
It was along the line, you know. I mean, it's, you know, I feel like we work in an industry that's it's made out of bartering in a lot of ways. So, you know, I do a lot of favors, and, you know, favors are done for me. So but I mean, as far as like on the executive side, you know, I did two albums at Atlantic,
mm-hmm,
and then I chilled for a minute, and, you know, I actually wound up you know, by chance, putting together a record, which was the Oh My record. And, you know, at the time, I was kind of like, you know, I'm kind of cool on doing the albums and the records and stuff. And, you know, the Oh My record kind of came together, and, you know, Fab had jumped on it, and, you know, Wiz had actually, this was when Wiz was, you know, first doing promo for his first run, and he came to Atlanta, you know, and I was always an early Wiz supporter, so, you know, he always showed me love back. Excuse me. And he was like, yo, what you got for me? And I didn't really have shit, so I let him, I gave him Oh My. And he recorded it, and, you know, the record kind of came out good, you know, and I was like, damn, I'm, you know, this might be one, you know. So I started working the record. Around that time, Atlantic actually let me out of my deal. They let me out of my deal, and I was able, you know, they gave me clearance, you know, on Wiz's verse. And so I started working it myself, started getting interest, what have you. E1 came calling, and I did a deal with them, and we put an album out. We put the Third Power album out, which is my third album. But I was still working with people within the Atlantic building, because that was a system I knew. So
shout out to Sam Crespo.
Shout out to Sam Crespo.
Marsha, you know, St. Hubert.
Shout out to Marsha. shout out to Emmanuel. You know, I was pretty much, I would use the same team. And Crespo went back, you know, Crespo went to Craig Kalman after working a bunch of records, from Oh My to Ain't No Way Around It to My Moment,
big record,
great, big, huge record. And, you know, he said, yo, you know, the drum's doing some good things out here, you might want to, you know pay attention. And Craig liked the idea, and he took the idea to Kaiser, you know, and Kaiser was like, I love it, you know. And they invited me back, you know, on the other side, which was, you know, a great opportunity for me. And I had taken a couple meetings at the time. Cannon was already inside the Def Jam building. Mm-hmm. And shout to Theo Sotomayor, my lawyer. He set me up with some other meetings, and, you know, word was getting around. So I actually sat down with L.A. Reid. That was that was a great meeting, you know, just to be in a room with that guy, you know, amazing guy. Just finished his
book.
But
he couldn't close.
I mean, he had some things going on, but shout to the homie.
Now that you're back at Atlantic, you brought Uzi over there.
Yeah.
Are you involved on the – obviously you're involved in, like, you know, the running of his career, but, like, how involved are you with making his album into what it will be?
I mean, a lot of the creative side, you know, Cannon and Uzi are, you know, very forward and hands-on in. You know, I kind of let Uzi do his thing when it comes to that. You know, I may, you know, sneak my head in and, you know, give my opinion, but he's got that. You know what I'm saying?
He doesn't like your jeans.
Yeah, he doesn't like my jeans. So, you know, I kind of stay out of his way when it comes. I mean, he's done a great job creatively of you know, making his own sound and his own brand. So, you know, I love that. You know what I mean? So I can, you know, once the music is done is when my job gets involved. And I try to come to him with ideas. And, you know, if he likes it, he likes it. If he doesn't, he doesn't.
Yeah.
Can you talk about – so really – after college, you haven't left the city, right? Like, you are in Atlanta heavy.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how the city has changed in all that time?
It's changed a lot, as much as it's stayed the same. It's changed because the one thing about Atlanta, and it's always been like this since I've been there, like, it's always, since I've been there, it's always been on the pulse of, you know, definitely hip-hop. You know, I mean, I would say, you know, almost to pop music in general, you know, but when it comes to Atlanta, it's like, you know, there's so many waves all the time. You know, I mean, I've watched it year after year after year after year, you know, the transition from, you know, this artist to this artist to this artist, you know, from Outkast to, you know, to Luda to Tip to Jeezy to
Snap Music.
You know what I'm saying? To Chainz to Future to Quan to Thug to, you know, Wife and Lucci to 21 Savage, you know what I'm saying? It's just, Atlanta is always, there's something in the mix, you know. And outside of that, even the people behind the scenes, like on the production side, or, you know, just the studio side, or what have you, there's always something going on. So, yeah, it's been a great place to, I always say, like, you know, it's hard for me to leave because the sauce is there. Like, you know, I think about all the careers that I've been a part of, and, you know, projects that I've been able to do. And, I definitely give a lot of credit to the city where I live, you know.
Do DJs get mad at one another when, like, if you do a mixtape with, like, Gucci Mane, and then he does one with somebody else, are you just like, what the fuck?
My only times that I've had an issue as far as an artist, And honestly, I've probably been a part of a couple too. So, you know, but it's only when there's a series that an artist may have started with me, I'd feel like, yo, that should be our series. Like, if you're going to go do I don't have, you know, I think it's, you know, no problem as far as, I mean, artists doing tapes with other DJs. I mean, one thing about DJs, we're competitive, but, you know, there's somewhat of a camaraderie different than, I guess, rappers to an extent. So, yeah, I don't mind, like, you know, I mean, just in Atlanta alone, like, for the most part, most artists have done a tape with me. They've done a tape with Scream. They've done a tape with Holiday. Like, you know, it's just, it's how you move. Like, yeah. Rightfully so. Like,
I mean, I've only done a tape with you, so right. Yeah. You know, my loyalty's intact.
So, yeah, if you guys do number two with somebody else, I'm gonna be fucking mad. Yeah. Like, you know, it's, don't call it Urbane Outfitters. Yeah. Like, y'all need a new name. If y'all go somewhere else. Like, if you call Metro Boomin, come up with a new fucking name. All right, that's
all I'm gonna say. It's gonna be problems.
That's right. Can we hear a good titty boy story? Not a 2 Chainz story, but a titty boy story.
Yeah, I got a lot of those.
Did you know that, like, he had this in him?
No. Because, like, he'll tell you.
Yeah, like, you watch him on, like, Chappelle's show, and he's, like, you know, in the cut. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that. Titty boy was actually the first person to really make. He told me on Jeezy Trap or Die, when Jeezy Trap or Die came out, and I said, yo, every street nigga is not a rapper, and every rapper is not a street nigga, but when you get it right, it's something special. Like, Titty Boy was the first person to come up to me and say, yo, when you said every street nigga ain't a rapper and every rapper ain't a street nigga, that shit was crazy. Like, so he was one of the first people to make me think, like, oh, I'm on to something here. Like, you know, this extra, you know, lingo that I'm talking on the tapes.
That's you.
There might be something here, like, beyond just shouting out stores and people. Like, these sermons I'm giving, this might be something special. So that was one. I remember Tit came over our crib when Sense was doing a DTP mixtape, and he did the rap on Sense's side of the crib. And Sense will tell you, he was there for about 12 hours working on it, like, nonstop.
Getting it right.
Yeah, trying to get it right, and he was real focused on it. Mm-hmm. He was the first person in the city with a Porsche Panamera, by far. And then he took, like, a complimentary jab at me, and he said, you know, I'm the hottest in the city without a gangster grills, you know, which was dope, because it was like he was kind of showing me love, but he was kind of poking me too, saying, you know, like,
sure,
fuck is my gangster grills. Like, I'm
you should have been like, yo, fuck you. You don't get one now.
I'm hot. But then the crazy part is, you know,
he does True Religion.
Yeah, he came back around, like, all right, Drum. Like, yeah. I gotta do it, you know, and it was dope. And you know, and I will say that I put him on the Omah remix, which I feel like kind of mended our relationship, you know, because I feel like he always kind of felt like, you know, I was overlooking him, which, you know, I was fronting in a little way. You know, I can admit to that. Like,
but you know what? He proved himself right.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
I was early on Titty Boy, and I was late on 2 Chainz.
He was early on Titty Boy, late on 2 Chainz? Yeah. So, and I, you know, when I did the Omah record, he hadn't even heard the record yet. But I had the Omah record, and I saw him in the club. I was like, yo, I got this record. When I do the remix, I need you. And he was like, all right. He hadn't even heard the record yet. So then the record started moving, and I had gotten Sean to agree to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was between Tit and French. It was a tough choice because they were both my homies.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went with
And so Tit. you're yelling this at the club to him?
I'm telling him, like, yo, I got this record.
I don't know how any business gets done in the club because it's always so loud. Like, I'm always like, I think
we were just walking in. So, but he just was like, all right. But he didn't know the record yet. So it worked out. And then, you know, his man, you know, Techniques used to be a mixtape DJ.
Yeah.
So, you know, we used to.
Also, one of the nicest guys ever.
Yeah, great guy. Yeah. You know, I'm very proud of him, and, you know, happy for his success. So, you know, we had our own relationship outside of Tit. So, you know, it kind of all worked out.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just like,
well, we have one more question left.
Oh, is that
That's it?
Oh no, we can go on. I didn't know.
Damn.
We were told that you had to go back to the hotel before the event tonight. But if we can keep going,
we got time.
All right. Can you talk about the R. Kelly tape?
The R. Kelly tape.
And by the way, for anyone, if that's ambiguous, the R. Kelly mixtape.
There we go.
The mixtape you did with R. Kelly.
Okay. Yeah, all right, yeah. All right.
Not anything that may be admissible to court.
It was, that tape came out like 7 years ago, so. I think I just got a call from R. Kelly's people.
Like, oh, I was going to say from him? Like, yeah.
um, He reached out probably after the initial phone call, but it was like, yo, R. Kelly wants to do a mixtape.
Because that's another time that it's got to be just like, what is this grown
into?
Like,
yeah, shit's crazy. I mean, it went from introducing new artists to becoming the resurgence of artists. Like, okay, I'm coming back to the streets. You know what I'm saying? So it was dope. I mean, you know, to have somebody like R. Kelly, like, you know.
Was he a good collaborator?
Oh yeah, it was easy to work with. It was
incredible.
Yeah, it was good. It was easy, super simple.
That's awesome.
And then, you know, this was a time when, in those years, like, I remember people coming to me with the idea, like, "Yo, I want to do an R&B mixtape." You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it was pretty much a rap thing. Hmm. You know, so like the Chris Brown tape and the R. Kelly tape, these were very early on in R&B Gangsta Grill's history. You know?
Yeah. Have you run into the Dream around Atlanta?
Yeah, I did a record with Dream on my second album called "Strip of Love" that he had given me. So, you know, I've watched the Dream and we've worked together on frequent occasions. And, you know, great guy and amazing talent.
Have you ever been to Puffy's mansion?
Which one, in Miami?
Yeah,
yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any good stories from there?
I mean, the food and the chef. Like, that's maybe whatever everyone you want. Says. Yeah. Whatever you want.
And did you take your shoes off going in there?
I did.
Yeah.
Because that's the rule at your apartment, too. Yeah. Is it still the rule?
Is it still the rule?
You could probably wear your shoes around, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't make people take their shoes off anymore. I got wood floors, though. Mm-hmm. So
We when we did a sketch with Max B., and we did it up at his apartment in the Bronx. We played Scrabble with him. Mm-hmm. They got mad at Jeff for not taking his shoes off.
I mean, I did. I just didn't do it immediately.
No, but like that apartment
there. I wasn't like, trying to cause problems.
They didn't have any furniture in the apartment. There was an ottoman.
Yeah.
There was a Pro Tools rig on a desk, and that was it.
Wow.
And apparently the ottoman like held all of his porn.
Yeah, well, that's weird. You know. Yeah.
What year was that?
That was 2008?
8 or 9,
okay.
Yeah.
When you guys first did the skit, like, were you excited when I... Because I reached out, right?
Yes, yeah. You reached out to us. Actually, so one of the most exciting emails we've ever gotten was from yours, and you signed it Mr. Thanksgiving, and we were just like, because we...
Yeah, put the skit out.
Well,
yeah.
we put a skit out about G-Unit hosting.
We were like, how come G-Unit can host a mixtape and we can't?
Right.
The whole thing was about that.
And by the way, we were nobodies at that point.
No, yeah, right.
We still are nobodies.
And
but,
we tried to get like people, we tried to rally people into like, you know, getting your attention. This is like probably before Twitter too, otherwise we just would have added you or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And you responded and you're just like, this is hilarious. And we're like, this is crazy. Like this just like doesn't make sense.
How did that even get on your radar?
I don't, was it before Twitter?
Yeah, yeah, I think it was before Twitter.
Maybe I saw it on a blog.
I'm sure. See, and that's something too. Like you talk about, like giving all your stuff away for free, and this is a business that, like, you know, you do a favor, you get a favor back. We did that for everybody. Like, we never made any money.
Right,
like,
right.
Never made any money until like recently. Like, all of our stuff.
Now we're making too much money though.
Redid the apartment.
Yeah. No.
But like, you know, all of our sketches and everything got like, you know, all those blogs a lot of money.
Right.
Like, they got those page views and everything.
Yeah, helped like Slaughterhouse, helped other people.
And for us, that was just like a chance to sort of like get our name out there. Mm-hmm. And like, so we get that from your standpoint too.
No, it worked out.
But later on, we charged them up the ass. You know,
you
like
go.
Just
yeah, that's not true. No. What's it called? So. Does DJ Khaled's success mean anything like for you and the business model of a DJ, or is it just like personal success for him?
I think it helps out just in general. You know, it just shows you how far you can go as a DJ. I mean, Khaled's always been quite successful, you know, which has kind of always opened a lot of doors, you know. So I just think that you know, in the landscape that we're in, like, the success of all of us, whether it's, you know, him, whether it's Metro, whether it's myself, Mike Will, like, you know, it opens these avenues and these doors that people pay attention to that, you know, says like, these guys are commodities, you know, these guys are brands. And so, yeah, it's always been helpful.
It probably helps that people now understand more what you do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and now that I feel like, you know, there's a crop of youthful DJs that are really making brands for themselves and really, you know, picking up where me and Khaled were, like Mustard and Mike Will,
mm-hmm.
you know, and DJs/producers that are able to carry the torches out here and, you know, take it to the next level.
Well, do you consider yourself an artist first or
I consider myself a DJ first.
Okay.
And then everything comes after that.
And I thought you would have said father first.
but that's all inclusive, right? Like touring DJ, when you're DJing,
yeah.
Like for private events, when you're DJing on the radio.
Everything.
DJ first.
Yes. DJ is the first two letters in my name.
That is true.
Yeah. Then doctor.
That's
yeah.
right.
Then Ama.
It used to be Jedi, but yeah. whatever. Yeah. Okay, fine. Do you still enjoy doing the radio aspect of everything?
I do. You know, I've been doing a lot of imaging radio-wise, so that's been kind of exciting for me. I remember when I was in college, rest in peace, I had one of my first teachers in mass comm was this guy named Tony Phillips, and we actually used to take the bus together to campus, and he told me really early on, he was like, yo, your voice is special, you know, and this was like still when I was kind of even just, you know, figuring out how to talk on my mixtapes, you know, so to now be in the climate that we're in and, you know, to be doing so much voice imaging and everything and, you know, go from screaming on mixtapes to, you know, hosting the BET Hip Hop Awards, you know, as far as the imaging goes or, you know, imaging for radio stations across the country, you know, it's kind of wild to me, you know, just, like it's quite the feat, you know, but I enjoy it all. Like I love being on the radio, you know, I love Shade 45. I love
and you do that out of Mean Streets,
yeah,
right?
I do it out of Mean Streets.
Gotta make everything real easy.
We do it live on. That was the reason why I built Mean Streets, honestly. That was the
so you never have to leave.
So I needed a radio room. Like I needed somewhere to do my show from. I moved from the old studio, and that was the initial reason why we built Mean Streets, is to have somewhere to do our satellite show from.
Did you have to ever do your own artwork for your mixtapes?
I didn't have to. Not since high school. I've always had an artist kind of doing it.
So you weren't like a Kinko's, like?
Oh, I was definitely a Kinko's. I was. I think Kinko's kind of made their new system based upon some of the shit I used to get away with, because I was bodying Kinko's. You know, a good smile goes a long way with a pretty girl at the counter. I did a lot. I remember there was a time at Kinko's when they'd be like, "How many color copies did you make?" And I'd be like, 10. You know what I'm saying? And so yeah, shout to Kinko's, man. They definitely came in handy.
And I know we discussed this when we had Uzi on too, and you and Cannon were here. You still consider yourself a Philly guy?
Absolutely.
After all Philly. The time you spent in
this
Atlanta.
This is going to be like a Wawa conversation.
No. Yeah. We can talk. Hey, I know. But like,
what do you get?
What's that?
What do you get?
No, I haven't.
We've never been.
We haven't been. What? I know.
What are you doing after this?
Oh, let's go to Wawa. It's probably one in Jersey. We can get there like an hour and a half. Oh, that'd be amazing.
Just a quick hour and a half.
But Philly, like, and that's everything. Like,
I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, I love, you know, I still root for Philly sports teams.
Right.
Like, I'm a Kobe Bryant fan. Cause
well, here's the real question. Who do your daughters root for?
I make them root for Philly teams. But, I mean.
They don't have a choice.
They like the Hawks, though.
Okay.
They like the Hawks, you know, but I make them Eagles fans, you know. And, you know, but, I mean, it's tough. I will say that, you know, they're Georgia peaches. I love Philly sports teams. I mean, I Atlanta's definitely home to me.
Right.
You know, and I give a lot of my credit to the city for, you know, making my career what it is. But, you know, I still, if people ask me, where are you from?
Yeah.
I say I'm from Philly. I live in Atlanta. You know?
One last thing before, like, the last question, I think. So probably two questions.
Okay,
last
nice. Before
yeah.
the last
yeah.
question.
Yeah,
got you.
All right, so you have, I'm trying to remember the exact drop. You say You Bastards. Gangster Grills, You Bastards.
Yes. I came from Tip.
Okay. Southern Smoke also has Southern Smoke, You Bastards.
Yeah, got it from me.
Ah.
Got it from you?
Uh-huh.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. Shout out to Smalls.
Yeah. Actually,
Gangster Grills, You Bastards was.
We saw Smalls first. Recently when we saw Gotti. Cause he's,
oh, you saw Gazi?
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh, Gotti.
Yeah.
He's been on Rogatti for some time.
Yeah.
By the way, he is small.
Very small guy.
Small guy.
That's the first time you seen him?
No, we met him once, but he walked by us. And we were like, oh,
yeah.
Yeah, he's got like a Philly beard.
Yeah,
yeah, he's a good guy.
Last question.
All right, so our friend Ashley Kamenowitz.
Ashley.
Yeah.
Yeah. She says that there's two types of people in this world.
Okay.
There's trash and there's garbage. So the question is, what are you? Are you trash or are you garbage?
I'm neither. I'm shining.
Oh, all right. Thanks so much for coming through, John.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Of course.
Long overdue.
Yeah.
And now we're going to go to Wawa.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, if people want more episodes just like this one, where can they go?
If you want the episodes as soon as they come out, as soon as they hit the internet, go to fullscreen.com/It's the Real. That is the best and first way to find our episodes. But if you want to wait a week, you can also go to soundcloud.com/A Waste of Time or search on iTunes for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. You can also rate us, you can comment, you can share, all of that. We are also on Twitter, It's the Real. We are on Instagram, It's the Real. We are on Facebook, It's the Real, also our government names.
Yes. What happens if people want to find us on Snapchat?
Then you go to not It's the Real, because It's the Real was taken. You go to It's the Real and It's the Real Eric.
You guys know the spiel. Go rate us, review us, leave a comment, say something nice about us. But most importantly, if you want this podcast to grow, please go tell a friend about A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, do you have a friend that you want to tell?
Yes, I want to tell my friend Foster Kamer, who listens regularly. But now he's going to hear his name coming from the radio while he's actually listening to it.
Shouts to Foster.
Shouts to Foster. Foster wants to be on the podcast, but I do not want to have him on because I don't want him to burn every industry bridge that he has, nor the ones that I have.
Wow.
So I'm not letting him on. Eric?
Well, first of all, Foster, go tell everyone that you know that you won't be on this podcast. I would like to tell our friend Joey Ayi to tell everybody he knows about this podcast, because Joey listens, number one. And number two, we saw Joey just this past week at the Boz show at Highline Ballroom, which was crazy, and we didn't know that Joey was going to be in town.
No, we walked into Highline Ballroom, we get an email.
Like right away.
Yeah.
We're walking into the back doors, and the place is packed, so like that anyone can see us is amazing.
Well, we stand out.
And then we get an email, and what does the email say? Jeff and Eric in this bitch. Shout out to Joey IE. Safe travels. For anyone on Twitter, tell us not for real, for real. Jeff, would you like to do this again next week?
Sure.
All right, we'll see you then. Great.